Welcome into a brand new episode of the Call in the Podcast, powered as always by CLNS. Malice Sparks joined by Alex Lovitz. We're recording at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour here in Boston on Tuesday, May 4th. And I guess, Lovitz, may the 4th be with you.
I'm not a Star Wars guy. I think we've discussed this. Not a Star Wars guy. Never got into it. I've seen maybe two of the movies, and it just never.
Okay, hold on. I get that there's people who don't watch Star Wars. Like, I get that. That's fine. It's not for everybody. I didn't watch it until I was about 14. Mm-hmm. How do you only see two of the movies, though? I feel like you either have seen all of them or you've seen none of them. I don't know that I've met anybody that was like, yeah, I watched a couple of them.
I just found – so the first one I saw, I did it wrong. The first one I saw was when I was little. It was the one with Ewan McGregor, and it, you know, those are typically known as the worst. So – that stunted, you know, my interest in sci-fi in general, let alone Star Wars. Then a few years back, I was like, you know, I got to give it another crack. I watched New Hope, the first one. I was like, I go in order. And it just wasn't – I didn't think it was that good. I just thought it was fine.
You got to power through New Hope. You just got to power through New Hope and get to the second one.
I hear the second one's the best one. Maybe I'll try it again. It's so long. It's a big commitment. And honestly, like, I watched The Matrix, I watched Lord of the Rings, two much more recent series, and I thought those were phenomenal. And those were long. Like, so it's the investment of watching Star Wars. So,
look, you don't have to worry about any of the Disney ones, okay? You just need to watch the six Star Wars movies. Anything beyond that is gravy. But you got to watch those six.
Yeah, I think maybe I'll try to get into that. I started watching This Is a Robbery, the one about the Gardner Museum in Boston.
Yes, so okay, that's on my list. Now that the draft is over, like, I have the Eric Andre one.
Yep.
That's on my list. The Tiger Doc, like, I got they're
oh, you haven't seen the Tiger Doc either.
No, I'm really backed up.
Yeah, but at least you got plenty of stuff to look forward to.
Oh yeah. And then I think there's some, like, shows came out with new seasons, too. I want to watch stuff like that. But, yeah, you should give Star Wars another shot. You should.
I think eventually I will. It's not like I'm never going to try it again. You know, I'm not too old. It's not, like, beyond my time. So maybe next time I'll start at the Empire Strikes Back. That's the second one, right?
I believe so, yes.
I think it's the second one. And yeah. I hear that's the best one. So I'll go there, and if I really like it, then I'll keep going. But if I think, like, oh, it's a fine movie, then I'm not going to keep watching it because that's the peak from what I've heard, and I just don't have the interest
in
keeping up with it.
The third one in the more recent trilogy, what is it, Revenge of the Sith? Whichever, the culmination of the prequels is really good, too. Also, yeah. if you watch what are really episodes 2 and 3 – right from the more recent ones, you get to see Hayden Christensen in the worst acting performance ever recorded on film. It's hilarious.
Can I also say this? Mark Hamill, who I, you know, before I watched it, I thought he was just some guy on Twitter who complained a lot. He was brutal. I think he's brutal at who is he? Luke Skywalker?
None of the acting in Star Wars is particularly great. I mean, that's like, kind of like Hayden Christensen. Here's the thing. If you think Mark Hamill was bad, Hayden Christensen's on another level. Like, Hayden Christensen starred as Anakin Skywalker and then basically never worked again.
He was so bad it ruined his career.
Yes. Well, that's, yeah, like, you're laughing, but yes.
Well, I do respect how Star
There's
Wars
does. There's this whole scene where he talks for 5 minutes about how annoying sand is.
Oh, geez. It's like the Fly episode of Breaking Bad. It's what it sounds like. That's the writer's fault at the end of the day. But if he can't deliver the lines, I guess he means he's a bad actor. I don't know. It's not my realm. I'm not as much of a sci-fi guy. Like, certain movies, I never got into Harry Potter. I never, like, I watched maybe three of the Harry Potter movies. Never read the books. Nothing like that. I draw the line at The Matrix, although I thought the third one wasn't very good. And Lord of the Rings. I think Lord of the Rings is kind of the gold standard for, like, science fiction movies. That one is truly a great epic. And The Matrix is great, but I think the third one, although necessary, they jumped the shark during that one. So,
I mean, how many prequels is the third one good, right? Even great, like Back to the Future, great trilogy. I don't watch the third one. No reason to.
Well, it's the first two movies are great. The third one, it's like Godfather. Godfather 1 and 2, two of the greatest movies of all time. The third one, you know, maybe it's fine, but it's not, it doesn't even come close. So
that's the thing. Like, I just, when you get to the third one, maybe Star Wars is different, but, you know, most of them, I actually think that the third one in the Star Wars series in both is actually the best one in both trilogies. But yeah, most, you know, by the time, if the sequel, how many sequels are good to begin with? And then you got to come up with a good third movie. It's just brutal.
It's all money grab. That's it. You know, they were going to make, you know, the movie Speed with Keanu Reeves.
Is that the one where if the bus goes below?
Yes. Sandra Bullock. Yeah. If it goes below 55, the bus explodes. So
I always thought that that was with Bruce Willis.
It seems like a Bruce Willis movie, maybe because it's like Die Hard-esque kind of, but no, it's Keanu Reeves. It's like one of the first big movies he did. They wanted to make a second one because, you know, one of those movies isn't enough. And he hated the script so bad. He's like, yeah, I'm not doing it. And so they attempted to blackball him from, you know, being in movies because he was like, I don't want to be a part of a bad movie. I don't care if you're paying me a ton. Then, you know, The Matrix came along and that kind of changed things for him. But more actors and more people need to say no to sequels. It breaks my heart when they make Dumb and Dumber 2 or they try to bring back Zoolander or Joe Dirt. Not necessary. The movies are fine as is. You're trying to recreate something that you can't recreate.
Well, it's because they're out of ideas.
It's that, and it's also they're morons who are going to go out and buy tickets. So they're going to make money. But also, you're ruining your legacy.
The sequel to Speed was called Speed 2 Cruise Control. That's brutal.
Yeah, you can see why he wanted out. So, and that's another reason, by the way, to respect the hell out of Keanu Reeves. One of the great.
Oh, absolutely. Love great Keanu. People. He's like a kind of, I don't want to say like a lesser Nick Cage because he's a better actor than Nick Cage, but in terms of like the cult figure status, right? Like the folk hero-y sense of it.
Yeah, he's a much more well-rounded person than Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage is a lunatic. I think
Keanu Reeves is kind of like a folk hero almost.
He's mystical. Like, he's
right.
Mysterious.
Keanu Reeves' legacy goes well beyond Keanu Reeves the actor.
Yes, like he has really obscure quotes, but he seems like a well-thought-out, nice guy. Also the star of a great sports movie, to bring it back to sports, The Replacements. Oh. I think he was good in that one as well. It's one of the more underappreciated sports
movies.
That's
probably my favorite Keanu Reeves movie.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. The problem with The Matrix for me, I saw it too young and I didn't get it.
Yeah. Watch it again.
If I go back and watch it again, like I feel like part of The Matrix has to hit. Because once you know what's going on, it changes the movie. You have to have a good first experience with The Matrix or you're not
going
to like it.
Well, it's like you kind of know what's going on. It doesn't spoil the movie. You know that it's like The Matrix is like a simulation type.
No, but I was young enough to not know. Like, I didn't really know the background of that. I was like, yeah, they showed it to us in school for some reason. But I was like 11, 12 years old, something like that probably.
It really is, though, an evergreen movie because there's the connection with technology and how we're over-dependent on it. This was like 2000, 1999, 2000, when it first came out. And it's kind of prophetic in a way, in the way that, you know, we're all so connected to our, you know, technology and whatnot, much more out there. But it's kind of an evergreen movie. You got to give it another shot because it's phenomenal and there's some
I've given it other shots. Like, it's not a bad movie. I think part of the Matrix has to hit right the first time you watch it.
Maybe. I had a bad experience when I was younger. I stopped a while. Like, I had a fit. My mom tried to take me and my brothers. I was the youngest. And I hated it. I just left the theater.
Well, maybe that's why. Maybe because you didn't finish it.
No, I didn't pay attention at all. I was being a stubborn little kid. So
you want a really good, you're talking about like, you know, a movie that like, you know, foreshadowing the real world, all of that. You want a really good one for that?
Idiocracy.
Have you ever seen? No. What movie?
Idiocracy.
That's a good one. But have you ever seen They Live?
I have not.
It's a John Carpenter movie.
I haven't seen it.
Okay. So, you know, the famous line, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum and I'm all out of bubblegum.
Is that the original? Because I've heard I'm here to do this and that, and I'm already out of this.
Yes, like, yes. So it starts in They Live. It's kind of a cult movie. I can't really tell you the plot without spoiling the movie. Like it's a very plot heavy movie, right? But
Roddy Piper.
It's a good movie too. It's a fun movie.
So Roddy Piper is the main actor in it.
Roddy Piper and Keith David, star of Saints Row.
Oh, Keith David, I know.
Love Keith David. Great, wildly underrated actor, Keith David.
He's phenomenal. He's good at every movie he's in. He does, and show. He does a good job in. I'll check that out, though.
Yeah, check out They Live. I think it's a quick one, too. Yeah, 94 minutes.
So 86% Rotten Tomato.
You can bang that out pretty quick. And then you would think it was made a year or two ago.
Really? Okay. I'll check it out.
80s, I think. 88. So check out They Live if you want a good, here's the future kind of movie. Big Brother. Let's look at that whole Big Brother thing going on. But it takes it to another level, which, again, it'll spoil it if I tell you what that is. But yeah, so didn't intend to do a ton of movie talk off the top. We normally do it at the end, but it's always fun. And yes, May the 4th be with you all. Let's move on to the draft, though, because it was a very fun weekend. And let's start with the obvious, Lebowitz. Let's just start with the obvious. The Patriots have a long-term plan at quarterback. Whether that plan will work out or not, I don't know. I think it will to an extent. I think they have a guy that is going to be at least a capable NFL quarterback, if not more. I think they have a guy they can win with the roster they have around him. I think they have a guy who in 4 or 5 years when his contract is up will be talking about wanting to resign here. I don't know. I that's what I like to think. But the reality is this conversation we've had of who's the next guy? Oh, Cam. Oh, Tyrod Taylor. Oh, Alex Smith. Oh, Sam Darnold. Oh, this guy, that guy, all these Jimmy Garoppolo, just, naming trash quarterback after trash quarterback. We're done with that conversation now for at least two and a half years. And on that alone, forget the player that Mac Jones is. On that alone, being done with that conversation, I am ecstatic.
It's great. It's nice. I mean, the thing that stinks is you have to wait and see if it will pan out. And that's, half the stress.
But there's some fun in that. I feel like that's more enjoyable than just, to borrow Jim Murray's term for the Red Sox bullpen, the wheel of gutless bums. Like, there's hope here. I don't know that there's hope in any of the other options.
Well, it's always more appealing when you have a guy who has no NFL experience coming in and, the sky's the limit, so to speak. You know what Jimmy Garoppolo brings you. You know what Cam Newton brings you. You know what a lot of these veterans who, the Patriots have been looking at bring you. Mac Jones, you don't know. He could be great. He could be bad. He could be mediocre. And you're just going to have to wait and find out. And there's also the aspect of it's a first round pick for Bill Belichick at a position where he's never picked a quarterback or never picked in the first round. So there's optimism that, if Belichick's willing to risk that 15th pick for a QB, a position he hasn't invested all that much into because he's had Tom Brady, then he must be worthwhile. But I think the surprise is they never traded up. There were teams that did trade up, the Bears, namely, getting Justin Fields. There was rumors that teams like the Broncos might get a quarterback. The Panthers might get a quarterback. The Lions, you just didn't know. And when you have that many unknowns and you have, Bill Belichick and that Patriots front office standing idly by, just waiting to see if that guy falls, I think it gives some people the impression that Mac Jones isn't somebody that they wanted to go after, but somebody that they would just take if he was there. And that might cause people to be a little bit concerned for, how optimistic Belichick and the Patriots front office might be for his future. And if he really is, that guy that you think he could end up being.
So here's what I'll say about that, because I've seen people throw that out there. Oh, Bill didn't want to draft Mac Jones. Oh, he wasn't happy. They weren't celebrating in the draft room. They really never celebrate in the draft room in New England. I know other teams do. There was footage of Detroit and Arizona, and they're all clapping and hugging. Patriots don't do that, at least not openly, at least not in the videos they released. Secondly, everybody's, they didn't want Mac Jones. Bill didn't want Mac Jones. Well, he picked him. He ultimately drafted him. And look, there's a report from Doug Codd. They wanted Elijah Vera Tucker, who went to pick before. Maybe he wasn't, Bill's guy compared to everybody. I know he wasn't Bill's guy compared to everybody else on the board, because there's no way Mac Jones was the number one player on their board. There's probably other players they really liked. I'm sure they had Penny Sewell ranked higher. He was off the board. So, yes, he's not their number one pick. I'm sure he wasn't their number one quarterback. I'm sure they had Trevor Lawrence ranked higher. They weren't getting him. But to say, oh, they're miserable about the Mac Jones pick, they made it. They made that pick. It's not like Mac Jones was forced upon them. And you can say, oh, maybe there was pressure from ownership to draft a quarterback. That's different. Because even if that's true, we know, again, this was from Doug Kye. They liked Davis Mills in the second round. They could have picked whoever there. They could have taken Zaven Collins at 15 and then taken Davis Mills. They could have waited on Kellen Mond, Kyle Trask, whoever. They picked Mac Jones. That is the definition of wanting Mac Jones. Right? Like, am I nuts for this? People saying, oh, really want Mac Jones. What does pick mean? What is the definition of pick? Choose. They chose him. They had options on the table, and he was the option they picked. I don't get why that's so hard to understand. I don't get why that has to be twisted already, right? We did this with Brady, where there was this rift between Belichick and Brady, and maybe it existed to some extent, but it was blown up into this whole thing that clouded over what should have been a fun period for the franchise. Mac Jones has never even put on a football helmet, and already we're talking about how Bill doesn't want him, even though contextual evidence tells us the opposite and reports tell us the opposite. They want Mac Jones. If they didn't want Mac Jones, if they thought he was a bust, if they thought he was a wasted pick, like some people are suggesting, Bill viewed that as a wasted pick, guess what? They wouldn't have taken him. They didn't have to do that. I'm a little fired up here, Lebowitz, but I think it's just ridiculous that, you know, the same people who were telling us, oh, they made a mistake letting Brady go. Oh, they didn't commit to the quarterback. They finally commit to the quarterback and it was a bad pick. No, that's not how this works. You're not just drafting Tom Brady. That's not how this works. They wanted Mac Jones, so they picked Mac Jones. End of story.
I think they dealt with this pick like they deal with any other pick. And I think there's a lot of people in Boston, in the area, who look at that quarterback position, and rightfully so, as, you know, a cut above. It's that much more important. Therefore, when you're going into the draft, you need to deal with that position and picking at that position with, you know, even more consideration and even more aggression. And the Patriots did the waiting game because, you know what, you're probably right. They had other options. And that doesn't mean they don't have confidence in Mac Jones. It just means they're dealing with that pick specifically the way that they deal with every single pick. And, you know, just because there has been media-driven hysteria, you know, thrown at that specific position doesn't mean that Bill Belichick was going to deviate from what he normally does and deal with, you know, that decision the way he deals with every other decision. Mac Jones, you're right, probably not the number one quarterback on that board. Maybe it was even Justin Fields and he felt like, you know, maybe he could have moved up to get him, but he didn't. He waited. He didn't lose any more assets, and the risk paid off because he had a backup plan. And that's kind of how, you know, he does things. But overall,
No, I'm just going to say in relation to Justin Fields, and I think that that's fair. Like, could they have traded up for Justin Fields? But the price to trade up in this draft was enormous. Because didn't want a lot of picks because there wasn't a lot of information on all these players, like significantly less information than recent years. So I think that, you know, you would have had to give up future picks, which Bill didn't want to do. And the reality is the way they're building this team is they spent a lot of money in free agency. So now they're going to have to hit on impact players in the draft. And if you use two first round picks for one player, which would have been the case for Fields, it's one less impact player you get. So, you know, it comes down to, would you rather have just Justin Fields or would you rather have Mac Jones and Chris Olave or Mac Jones and John Mechie or Mac Jones and, you know, Josh Jobe, one of these corners that's going to be in the draft next year, Derek Stingley. And I think Bill looked at it and said, I'll take two impact players over one.
And maybe there's a problem with that. You know, maybe he should be looking at that position differently and be putting, you know, more weight on it, be willing to put more assets into getting the right guy. Because if you don't have a good quarterback in the NFL, it's just tough to win. And time will tell. Time will tell. Maybe Justin Fields does well in Chicago and Mac Jones is a bust. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case. But who knows? Either way, you have to be relieved if you're a Patriots fan because there's no longer a guessing game at what they're trying to do. They have the guy that they think is the guy. And don't discount that Alabama connection as well. You know that Saban, although he has a vested interest in making sure that players from his program are picked high and, you know, he probably talks them up. That relationship between Saban and Belichick it's probably cut above the relationship between Saban and any other coach in the NFL. So I really do value the fact that Belichick went with the Alabama quarterback, given his relationship with Saban, and then the next pick, obviously, going with Christian Barmore, another Alabama product. It seems to show me that, you know, they've done their research. They know that he's going to be at least suitable. And here's another reality. Mac Jones doesn't need to be a top three quarterback in the NFL for the Patriots to be a Super Bowl contending team.
Right.
Especially when you're building up the defense the way that Belichick is building up that defense, especially when you have a decent offensive line and you give him some weapons. And, you know, it seems like that's the route Belichick is going. And if Mac Jones ends up being elite, a franchise type quarterback, that's even better. But he doesn't necessarily have to be that guy. He can be a good value pick at that 15th spot and not be a top three guy. And I think that's absolutely on the table.
I mean, I wrote this last year before the draft that Bill Belichick isn't trying to build his team like most NFL teams are being built right now. He is picking up where he left off when Tom Brady emerged in 2001. And if you look at the acquisitions he made pre-Brady in New England, all of his draft picks, all of his high draft picks were either defensive players, offensive linemen, or running backs. His biggest free agency signing, same thing. Defensive players, offensive line, running backs. He was building a smash-mouth football team that was designed to come out, play physical, and win games, you know, 13-6. And that's the plan again. You go back over the last couple of years, that is absolutely what he's doing, and there's nothing wrong with that. The reality is, the San Francisco 49ers 2 years ago got within a couple bad Kyle Shanahan decisions away of winning a Super Bowl with that model. The Buffalo Bills, until Josh Allen broke out, were being built around that model. The Baltimore Ravens are a little bit different, but there's some similarities there. This is, I think, the new direction of the NFL, as teams are realizing for every Patrick Mahomes you get, right, you're going to get 10, 15 busts. Players you think are in the same mold, but you're going to get 10 or 15 busts. Teams try to get the next Aaron Rodgers. For every Aaron Rodgers, you're going to get 10 or 15 Jake Lockers, and teams just don't want to take that risk anymore. Unless, you know, you're in a spot like the Jaguars where you're getting the generational guy, I think teams would rather build up the rest of the roster and just find a serviceable quarterback. Mac Jones might only be Jimmy Garoppolo, but the reality is, if he's a Jimmy Garoppolo who doesn't get hurt, that's enough with this roster. And I think Belichick knows that they can be what the 2019 Niners were, and they can have more sustained success because Mac Jones should be more durable.
And you look at the other picks that they've made, and also some offseason signings, and it kind of plays into that point.
Oh, absolutely. Two tight ends. They signed half of their signings in free agency were along the defensive line. Two of their top three draft picks were along the defensive line. They go out, they get a run-stopping linebacker as well. This is what Bill is doing. He is going back to where he left off when Tom Brady emerged in 2002. Like, that was gravy. Those teams were built to win defensively. Brady was gravy, and the offense was gravy. That was never part of the plan. He's going right back to where he left off with Mike Vrabel and Roman Pfeiffer and Brian Cox and Anthony Pleasant and Richard Seymour and Matt Light and Mike Compton and Antoine Smith. And that core, that was supposed to be the core of those teams. He's going right back there, and he's bringing it back with Ramondre Stevenson and with Isaiah Wynn and with Chase Winovich, Josh Uche, Christian Barmore, like you mentioned. Like, this is the plan. Go back and look at what they were. Seriously, go back and look at, if you don't believe me, the key acquisitions in 2000, 2001, and you can even go to 2002, because Brady was still, you know, you knew he was the starter, but you didn't know what he was really until after the 2002 season. So go look at those first 3 years of Belichick's personnel moves in New England and look at what he's done the last 3 years. They match up incredibly well.
And it's crazy that it's pretty much like 20 years on the dot that this cycle's going. And that's just another, another signifier for how successful that run was with Brady and Belichick. Although we've hit on that point, you know, ad nauseum. And it also seems like they got a lot of high value picks in this draft specifically. You look at Barmore, a guy who had some off the field troubles, but someone who, by all accounts, super high ceiling, someone who can be a real troublemaker on that defensive line. And then Ronnie Perkins, who is also somebody who plays outside linebacker, can play the D end. And they've gotten positionless in some ways with Bledsoe as well. Joshua Bledsoe, I know you're excited about that. Another Bledsoe on the Patriots. So yeah, there clearly is a focal point for Bill Belichick. And it's not the offensive side of the ball. Not that he hasn't done a great job of filling those voids and creating a great line and adding skill position guys. But the focus is on that defense. Here's a question for you. They drafted Ronnie Perkins. They got Cameron McGrone. Two linebackers, and Cameron Grown, really the inside linebacker type. Great play, great at play recognition, all that good stuff. Is this any indication on Dante Hightower's future in New England, or are these just simple depth additions that, you know, we shouldn't read too deep into?
Well, I mean, Hightower's future certainly year to year. Okay. And I don't think you can dispute that. I don't know that McGrone's the direct replacement. McGrone's probably not going to play this year. Bill said that. And he tore his ACL in November, and they don't really know what his recovery window is. So this is where, I mean, it was a value pick. They got a guy who was very talented, probably a round or two later than they should have, simply because, you know, there's the inherent risk with the torn ACL. I don't think Bill's putting all his chips in replacing a guy like Dont'a Hightower and a kid who would be playing in his first year in the NFL and coming off, you know, ACL recovery. So I don't know quite about that, but he certainly is. I mean, they need, if you want to look at what McGrone's going to do, Juwan Bentley's in the last year of his contract.
Yeah.
So that's more where I'm looking at. This is Bentley insurance. This is that backup middle linebacker. And I wouldn't be surprised if they spend big, whether it be in the draft or free agency, on an inside linebacker next year. I think Raekwon McMillan's somebody who could make a push too. I think he's really being slept on. Perkins is an outside linebacker, defensive end. He doesn't factor into the Hightower conversation as much. He's more so, to me, tells me that they're not sold on Chase Winovich.
Really?
And to me, that's more they're doubling down on. They're not a huge fan of what Chase Winovich has been doing because they're very similar players. Very similar players. And they're looking to maybe bring in some competition in that spot and at the very least create a platoon in that spot where, again, similar players, Perkins is probably better against the run. And now you have Perkins for situations where run's more likely and maybe Winovich becomes a more situational player as well. That was another thing that surprised me about their draft. Barmore and Perkins, at least initially for the first year or two of their careers, are going to be situational players. They generally don't draft situational players that highly. I'm not saying they were bad picks. I'm actually kind of glad they did. But I think that Perkins is here to push Chase Winovich.
And I think we kind of saw a similar thing, you know, in regard to like situational players. Chase Winovich has kind of been that. He's been impactful, but, you know, he's not somebody you put out there on the run.
Were trying to, and then remember last year he got benched essentially in the middle of the season. He wasn't.
Yeah, and they talked back to Belichick. He was upset, and I do remember that. So maybe you're right. I'd like to think they have more faith in Winovich than that because the guy has a lot of upside. That said, he was an old rookie when they drafted him. He's what, 25 now, maybe 24. Not old guy, but they kind of know what he's going to bring to an extent. And they could, you know, speculate as to what his peak is. So you might be right. And it seems like they did make a priority of trying to fix that void in general. Their defense is going into this year is a lot better, not even due to this draft, just offseason acquisitions, players getting 1 year older, all that good stuff. And they probably will have a top three defense in the NFL, in my opinion, at least. One question I missed, you know, we went past the Jones stuff. This is probably going to be the most asked question for the next few months. When will Jones be the official starting quarterback of the New England Patriots?
So that's a very good question, right? And like you said, that's what it all comes down to. If we're being honest, it's too early to tell. And here's why. We don't know when the bye week is yet. And that's going to be a factor because when you see how teams like to do this in the past, and this is what the Dolphins did last year, right? They wait until they have kind of those 2 weeks, that extra time to prepare to make the switch. So let's see. The schedule comes out a week from Wednesday on the, I think it's, is it the 12th? I don't know. I think it's the 12th. Yes. Wednesday night. We'll learn during the day. So, you know, if the bye week's in the middle of the season, I think you circle that. If they get an early bye or a late bye, you look at when the Thursday night game is and they kind of have that de facto half bye coming off of it. Maybe that's something that they circle and that's a moment where they do it.
If you had to give a percentage chance of him starting week one, what would you give?
Oh, very low. I don't know, 10-15%.
Okay, that seems.
I think that Bill Belichick historically just in, and it's nothing against Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. Bill Belichick historically has been hesitant to play rookies to begin with, and then the quarterback position as a whole, the importance of that. You know, I think Jones is going to have to be, not only would Jones have to be spectacular at camp, Cam Newton would have to be brutal, not just bad, brutal, for that to happen. Like, I'll say this in relation to that question. If Mac Jones is your week one starter, I don't think Cam Newton is on the team. I think really? As long as Cam Newton is on the team, he is the week one starter.
But I do think that's an interesting point. It's either Mac Jones is spectacular or Newton stinks. I think Belichick, in a weird way, would rather put out a stinky Cam Newton if Mac Jones wasn't ready, even if he was better at that point than Cam Newton.
Yes.
Like, yeah, it is about winning, but at some point, for Belichick especially, it's about player development, and yes. He's not going to want to put him out prematurely. So if Mac Jones does start week one, I mean, there's no way to spin it that's not, you know, a great thing for Patriots fans. They should be excited that Belichick has that much confidence in Jones that early on, if it does happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I just, like you just said, they want to make sure Mac Jones is ready. They don't want to throw him in there too early and all of a sudden he struggles and, you know, his confidence gets shot and then your investment's down the drain, right? We've seen teams do that before and it just doesn't end well, never ends well. So, I think that they're going to be cautious with Mac Jones. They're going to be careful with Mac Jones. I wouldn't be surprised if he sits the whole season. It's going to be frustrating. That's mm-hmm. the reality of it. And we'll call for Mac Jones. I'll probably call for Mac Jones at times, but the thing with the first-round pick, they have that extra year of control. All these guys they signed, they're, you know, I think Kendrick Bourne's really the only one of the major signings who's on a one-year deal. This core is here. They're going to mm-hmm. be here for 2022 and 2023 for the most part. There's really shouldn't be much of a rush. You want a little bit of urgency, certainly, but let Mac Jones start when they're comfortable and when he's comfortable. Don't rush him into it. I'm all for that. I said this during the process when people said, you know, how will you react when if Cam Newton resigns? And I remember talking about, you know, who should be the bridge guy? And my response was, and I think this is what every Patriots fan should feel. I'll take 8-10 more weeks of crappy quarterback play if it means that the next quarterback is the guy for 10 to 15 years. I will take another rough half a season, even in a full season, if it means Mac Jones becomes legitimate franchise quarterback. I will totally take that trade off, and it might not be super fun this year. Absolutely might not be fun, but let Mac Jones, like, this is a pretty serious investment. It's a 15th overall pick. I don't think Patriots fans, because it's been so long, understand the kind of investment this is. You've got to make sure he's ready. You can't rush him in and risk ruining his confidence.
And it is worth noting, Patriots are going to have a much easier schedule this year than what they usually have.
I don't know about that.
No, not even the fact that they finished third place, right? They finished.
Yeah, but you look at who some of their opponents are. They got to play the NFC South, so they've got the Bucs, obviously. The Saints. The Falcons are going to be a good team. I mean, you're right. I guess in that sense, it's easier. But, you know, like Dallas, they're playing Dallas because they both finished in third. But Dallas is a good team. Dallas didn't finish in third because they have a lack of talent.
Yeah, right. Dak Prescott was out.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, it's not their hardest schedule. I don't think it's the hardest schedule in the league, but I don't know that it's – and their divisional games are going to be tougher too. Miami and Buffalo are both going to be legit teams this year. So I don't know that
it's – The Jets made upgrades.
Yeah, I'm not – the Jets allowed – here's my thing on the Jets, and everybody says the Jets had a great draft. I don't buy it. I think Zach Wilson was my QB5. I don't think Zach Wilson is very good.
You have him behind Mac Jones?
Yes. He's like 190 pounds. He's going to break in half.
I got to tell you, I don't know much about Zach Wilson. I look at his face. I look at his demeanor. I am more sure than anything that he is going to be a complete abysmal failure in the NFL.
He's 12 years old.
He's 12. There's no way he has a good career, and I cannot wait until that happens. But I'm sorry. Finish your point.
So again, Wilson, they had to take a quarterback. We'll see. Quarterbacks all crapshoots. Elijah Vera Tucker, fine player. I don't know that they needed to trade up for him. And more specifically, they drafted him as a tackle. He's going to be a guard at the next level. That pick was whatever. Elijah Moore with their third pick, fine. Good player. You got to use him right. But for their system, I'll give him that one. And then they draft a running back with their final top 100 pick, which, again, not a bad player, but you allowed a franchise record in points last year. You did almost nothing to address your defense in free agency. And then you go chalk offense with the premium picks. I get that it's like a long-term plan and that, you know, they'll probably go all defense next year. And I get that, but you got to do something. You've got to do something because you don't want – what happens when Zach Wilson comes out and they go 2-15 because they allow 40 points every week? Like, that's not great for Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
So I would have liked to see them add – like, one of the biggest misconceptions in this draft is adding defensively doesn't help your quarterback, right, with the Packers taking Eric Stokes, which, by the way, fantastic pick. Fantastic pick. And, oh, doesn't help Rodgers. It helps the team win, which helps Rodgers. You don't think they needed a second true outside corner in that NFC Championship game last year when they gave up that touchdown going into the half? Eric Stokes doesn't allow that touchdown. And I know Rodgers wasn't tremendous in that game, but having a legitimate defense would have helped. So, yeah, not super sold on the Jets. But, yeah, getting back to it, I mean, they'll be tougher than they were this year for sure. The schedule to me, I mean, and we'll find out the order too, because the order does matter. They're probably going to have a game in London at some point. So you got to see when that is. There's a rumor they're going to play on Thanksgiving, which puke. But we'll see how
I heard that might be the Bucks game. Imagine.
Yeah, that really shouldn't be the Bucks game.
That'd be a travesty. So another question, wide receiver. A lot of Patriot fans, people in the media, always crap on the Patriots, success in picking at that position. They ended up getting a guy in the seventh round, Trey Nixon, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Trey Nixon,
yes,
from
UCF.
I mean, he's a seventh round pick. Call it what it is. They didn't spend any, you know, high quality draft capital on a wide receiver, even though a lot of people expected that they might make that move. What do you make of them staying away from that position? Did it come down to just the right guy wasn't there at that moment? Or do you think, I think it was Evan Lazar who had a theory that this might be somewhat of an admission that the Patriots don't have confidence in judging how a wide receiver from, you know, a college level, more simple playbook, not as demanding from a mental standpoint. It's an admission that they might not be as good at evaluating whether a guy like that will transition well into the Patriots organization. What's your take on them not spending a high pick on a wide receiver?
Sure. So there's some truth to that. I think what Evan said, that I don't know that it's they don't feel like they can evaluate it, but the college game has shifted so far from the NFL game, and where the Patriots offense is so complicated, it is you're almost jumping two levels instead of one if you're a receiver coming from college directly to the Patriots. That being said, them needing a wide receiver, they need a wide receiver. That's more of a meme at this point to me than a fact. And like memes have taken over draft Twitter for some time now, right? Rodrigo Blankenship last year was more of a meme than a quality player. He went undrafted. Okay. So if you look at the way the Patriots roster breaks down, and I think the people calling for the team to draft a wide receiver either don't understand, I don't want to say they don't understand the game of football, but they don't understand how roster construction works. They just want an excuse to bash the Patriots, or most likely it's a little column A, little column B. But if you look at the whole thing in context, right, they need a true number one wide receiver. Well, they have two of them. Their names are Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. And there seems to be these people who believe that just because it says T-E instead of W-R next to your name on the roster, you can't be a legitimate receiving threat. I don't know why people think this, but there's a significant portion of the football following population that thinks this. But those guys are going to be legitimate number one targets. Nelson Aguilar is a fine, like, they didn't need, look, if they could have gotten Devonta Smith or Jamar Chase, right, or Kyle Pitts, if they could have gotten one of the top three pass catchers, this is another story, but they couldn't, so that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They have two top receivers, okay? They just happen to play tight end, but those are two top passing options. On top of that, they're going to carry at least 9 pass catchers this year before that pick, and that doesn't count Matthew Slater. They're going to carry 5 receivers, assuming they don't trade Harry. And they trade Harry, maybe this changes, but they didn't. They're going to carry 5 receivers, and they're probably going to carry 4 tight ends. And if you want to say, well, they shouldn't have to carry 4 tight ends because they shouldn't have picked those two guys last year, I might agree with that, but they took them, and this is where we are. 9 spots you're using on pass catchers on a 53-man roster. That's almost 20% of the roster. So on top of that, they're going to be in 12 personnel a ton, which is two tight ends. That's two wide receivers instead of three. They're really only going to use, because those two wide receivers aren't going to play 100% of the snaps, but they're really only going to use three wide receivers instead of four. So when you look at the roster context in a whole, they're carrying nine pass catchers. They have two legitimate receiving threats who can factor in at three levels. They only really have snaps for three receivers to play. Why? The question isn't why didn't they add a wide receiver? It's why should they? What are you doing with that guy? There's no immediate plan for that guy to play. I think taking a receiver with that seventh pick was exactly what you do in that situation. Because, yes, you would like to have a real wide receiver at some point. You do need some depth there, certainly. But what they did is they took Trey Nixon. They'll be able to stash him on the practice squad and see what they have. And maybe he turns into something. And then all of a sudden you have a wide receiver, or maybe he doesn't and you don't have room for the guy, but it doesn't matter because he didn't invest anything in him. So they never really needed a wide receiver. That was just a meme. And on Trey Nixon specifically, I don't know if you saw this, Lebowitz, he was Ernie Adams' final pick. Ernie Adams retiring, pink stripes forever. But Ernie Adams' final pick kind of has to be a hit, right? Like, am David I dumb Gibbons. For assuming Trey Nixon's going to be a Hall of Famer?
No.
Just based on that?
It would be quite a story. If he ends up actually being a legitimate contributor, and you know, Belichick mentioned David Gibbons, who ended up being, obviously, his career was cut short a little bit due to injury, but great Patriot. One of the quintessential Patriots from our early childhood, right? Seventh round pick. I think he was picked 253 or something.
Yeah, right around that same range, yep.
Trey Nixon, 242. So that could be nice. And it was a nice little send off for Ernie Adams. Well, we're on Ernie Adams. I got two other questions on the draft, but we'll since you mentioned Ernie Adams, his retirement, what does this mean for the Patriots? Obviously a Nick Caserio leave. Now Ernie Adams is retiring. Was Ernie Adams' impact on the Patriots organization overplayed due to him being such kind of an enigmatic, you know, odd figure, or is this going to be a big blow for Belichick and the Pats?
So Ernie Adams was the real deal. It's hard to say exactly what the impact of him leaving is because we don't know what he did. Right. So it's hard to say, oh, they're losing this and this. We know vaguely what he did, but not exactly. But no, he's been Bill Belichick's right-hand man since the 70s. This is a major shift in the organization. And they brought in this guy, Evan Rothstein, from Detroit last year, who it sounds like played a similar role with the Lions. He came over from Matt Patricia. So they still have somebody maybe doing what Ernie Adams was maybe doing. I don't entirely know. But no, this is seismic. This is pretty big. This is, it's pretty close to, in my mind, it's pretty close to Edelman leaving in terms of the, you know, the fiber of the organization, just ingrained in the fiber of the organization. I mean, Ernie Adams predates Belichick in New England. Like, when Belichick got here, the scouting system they were using had been put in place by Ernie Adams 20 years before. Think about that. Wow. As long as Belichick has been here, he's been using a system Ernie Adams created two decades earlier with Chuck Fairbanks in you know, the mid-70s Patriots, who, by the way, were good teams, underrated teams. But no, this is Ernie leaving's a big one. And it's hard to say, you know, well, this is what they need to compensate for, and this is who they need to find to replace him, because we don't know exactly what he did. But you'd assume that there is some sort of scrambling going on behind the scenes or if he'll be replaced at all. There just may be nobody who can do what Ernie Adams did, and that what he did just isn't going to be a factor in how they run the operation anymore.
I also feel like, because we saw this with Dante Scarnecchia, he retired, then he came back, and like he would come back once in a while. I feel like there's going to be like a consulting role that he'll have within the organization. Like, he'll still have, you know, a hand in everything to an extent. I think the big thing is, you know, when you compound this, you mentioned in the locker room, you're losing Julian Edelman, one of the best leaders on that team. No question about it. In the front office, you're losing Nick Caserio in addition to Ernie Adams. That seems like two major blows to the organization from a front office standpoint. Obviously, the most important guy in that room is Bill Belichick, and that will never change. But not having those guys to lean on, That's going to affect the way that the organization runs to some extent. And I wonder if they can fill that void. You know, obviously Caserio wasn't in New England prior to what, 2009, at least in the type of role that he ended up having. It's not like he hasn't done it before, but you compound those two losses. It seems like it's definitely nothing small. So two questions remaining for me. One, pick of the draft. We'll leave Mac Jones out of it. I don't think he would be your pick anyway. You're an outside the box type of guy.
Who's
your pick
of the draft? It was Mac Jones. Was it? You know what Occam's razor is?
Yes. It's
sometimes the most obvious solution is the right solution. Yes, people just overlook it because Mac, they needed a quarterback. They got a quarterback. It's boring, but it's what they need to do. So my pick of the draft besides Mac Jones, I actually really like Ramondre Stevenson. And oddly enough, he's one of the few guys I didn't totally prepare for. I thought he'd be off the board well before that point, but I think the LeGarrette Blount comps are real. I do. And he can catch the ball a little bit. He's a great pass blocker. They really haven't. They've been backed by committee for a long time. They've never really had a running back that plays more than 35-40% of the snaps under Belichick. If Stevenson pans out, he's a guy who you can have on the field 50-55% of the time. And he doesn't have a lot of touches under his belt either. So he's got, not a lot of mileage on him. He could end up being sneakily a very, very, very good pick.
Yeah. And he's also he seems like a quintessential power back. You mentioned the LeGarrette Blount comparisons. I feel like they just haven't had that for a while. You've had guys who are kind of just more elusive and they have strength and whatnot, but that's not really
they're tweeners. They're a little bit of everything. Like Sony Michel, Damian Harris, they can run over guys, but they'll run around too. They're not, again, the backs they've been bringing in, the backs they've been drafting for that role have been anywhere between, 210, 220 pounds, 6 foot, 210, 220. Stevenson's coming in at 240. And he's nimble on his feet. That's where the Blount comparison comes in. It's not just that he's a power back, but his footwork's impeccable. His balance is impeccable for a guy that size. This isn't a guy who's just going to run downhill until he gets hit and falls. He can move laterally as well. That's what makes it so interesting.
Yeah, it's hard to take him down in general, not just beyond a power standpoint. UDFAs. What are your thoughts on this process? Obviously, the Patriots haven't done anything yet, at least that I've seen. Maybe they have and I've missed it. Other teams have made a few moves from what I've been reading, but overall it's been quiet so far. What do you expect to see from the Patriots when it comes to undrafted free agents?
It's tough because there's not a ton of context here. The thing with the UDFAs this year is there's not – so the normal player pool is over 1,000 players for the NFL draft. That's, the number you're normally looking at is 1,100. It was 600 this year, or a little more than 600. So the overall talent, right, if you think about it, is significantly less in the draft, which means that the UDFA talent significantly less as well. They don't have a ton of roster spots. They have some. I'm surprised they didn't sign anybody. I didn't think they'd be super aggressive. They're going to want to fill that out to 90 before camp. They always do. And the reality is they just need some more bodies in camp to make things go, right? They need a fourth quarterback. They need another lineman or two. They need another safety, not necessarily for the 53-man roster, but just to have enough bodies where camp can play out as it should. So they'll sign somebody, and, maybe that will be veterans, right? They need another outside corner. If you want to talk about their remaining needs for the 53-man roster for this current season, they need a third outside corner. Maybe that's Jason McCourty coming back. Maybe it's somebody else. I don't know. They're going to make signings, but it was a rough year for UDFAs to begin with, but they'd signed at least 10 in each of the last 5 years. They didn't have 10 spots this year. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they're going to fill those spots with veterans. And by the way, roster cuts this year, if you're doing roster projections, going to be brutal. Think about that. 90-man roster, okay? You normally have 15 to 20 UDFAs. 13 of those guys are auto cuts at least, right? There's none of those this year. They have 8 rookies. The NFL talent on this roster is ridiculous. They might not have the top-end talent some other teams have, but their depth is impeccable.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have. Definitely a good problem to have.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, we'll see what happens when they get into camp, but it especially with the cap room they still have, and it's not a ton, but with the cap room they still have to not have that many rookie contracts, it really is surprising.
So what's your overall grade for the Patriots draft?
Oh, I mean, I hate doing grades, but they did well. They did well.
How about relative to the rest of the league? Where do you think they finished? Like, was there a draft? I don't know if you've done a full in-depth view on all 32 teams, but would you say they had like a top five draft this year?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think they're right around five. You know, I'd say they're top 10, and they're certainly not 10. I think around five or six, probably I'd put them in that range. I thought, you know, there's some drafts that blew me away. I thought the Lions were fantastic. I thought the Titans were fantastic in what they did, drafting both, you know, getting talent, filling needs, picking up assets. I thought the Giants had a great draft. I thought they did incredibly well. So, you know, those were the three that really blew me away. The next group is teams that just, you know, they did well. I don't know that there was ever a wow moment, but there were no major disappointments either. I'd put the Patriots in that second tier where TCOB, they took care of business. They got, they added talent. They added players who will factor in relatively quickly. I guess for me, the one knock is I would have liked to see them add future assets. They didn't do that. I thought with 10 picks and they weren't going to make 10 picks, they had a really good chance to maybe trade out of some spots. And it, especially with those three picks in a row from 179 to 197, I thought they might move one of those and pick up something for the future. Granted, they took all, you know, I thought solid players in that range, but the one knock for me would be not adding any future assets, but there was nothing where I was like, oh, they screwed up. Oh, they made a mistake. Oh, this is bad. Like they, you know, they did well. That was at the time. There were no picks where it was like bad picks. Well, some of the players not pan out, maybe, but I don't think there was a pick where I was like, okay, this doesn't make sense. They should not have done this.
Gotcha. All right. I think that's all I have. Do you have any other thoughts that we have yet to get to when it comes to the draft?
I mean, probably. I'm honestly still catching up on sleep.
Yeah, you've had a bit. I mean, I that's how I should have started. We should have done a wellness check here because it was about 2 months straight of doing, you know, at least 8 or 9 mock drafts. That's probably underselling it. You're putting out a ton of content for 98.5, the Sports Hub. And it all came to fruition, and it appears as though it went somewhat how you'd expect it to go, which is great. Right. But overall, it's done. Now we're really getting to the thick of it, and what, a month and a half until we have OTAs and all that good stuff.
About that. Oh, you know what? I do have one more draft takeaway. I do. On ESPN. So I don't know where you watch the draft.
ESPN.
Okay, NFL Network does a great job, and I love Rich Eisen, but I've been watching on ESPN for so long, I just kind of have to do it at this point. I'm setting my ways. Also, just the music they play under the headlights, right, under the highlights, it's fantastic. But some of the analysis, I mean, Booger McFarland was brutal. Mel Kiper, as always, I mean, he's kind of lost his fastball a little bit. But I switched over to the ABC feed where they had the College Game Day crew. Oh, they were fantastic. And it wasn't this... It wasn't this, you know, sob story after sob story about reliving the worst moment of every player's lives. They were giving you real educated football analysis. I don't think they were talking down to, you know, I think they kept it within the realm where the average fan could understand it, but they weren't necessarily talking down to the more educated fans either. I love College Game Day is my favorite, you know, sports preview show. I like it better. NFL Countdown, NBA on TNT, all of that. College Game Day to me is the gold standard. And I don't remember them doing a ton of stuff for the draft in the past. I know they've kind of been around, but to me, they killed it. They were great. They should be more featured throughout ESPN's football coverage, both college and pro. I thought I was very entertained watching that.
Yeah. You'd think they would do that crossover more because who's going to know these guys and what they bring to the table more so than the ones who've actually been covering them all season long. You can talk about the scout specific guys like Mel Kiper and those people and the likes, but and they cover college football too, but
right,
still you want the people who have actually been following these kids' careers since they've been playing collegiately. So I'll check that out next time. I did do ESPN and it wasn't great. I also didn't think the NFL Network's coverage was anything all that great. I don't know. There's a lot of sports media that's kind of meh to me, at least. So
I didn't watch a ton of NFL. Like I said, like I'm just kind of setting my, I like Eisen. I like the crew at NFL Network, but
Kiper does have that ESPN. Kiper does have that. Like, oh, it's the draft. It's Mel Kiper's there. His hair slicked back. We're ready to go. But yeah, I think that's all I have for draft stuff. I'm excited. Right. It's good. They got a quarterback. I think that's my biggest takeaway. They got a QB, and it seems like a lot of the other guys they got were good value picks. So
that's what I'd say. Patriots fans should absolutely be excited about the draft. Like, you don't need to be down on it. They gave you reason to be excited. So I do want to do real quick hockey minute here, though, Lebowitz. Tom Wilson, back in the news. Did you see the play? You saw the play from Monday night?
Yep. Yeah.
And so he gets fined the maximum $5,000. Everybody freaks out. Should they just increase the maximum fine at this point? I really think they should. Or there should be stages to the maximum fine where, you know, first time maximum fines, maybe $5,000. Second time maximum fine, $7,500. You go up like that.
Yeah, but here's the problem. That fine, I believe, it's got to be something that's dealt with in the CBA. So that's just the players union doing its job, right? Like,
why should the players union defend Tom Wilson?
Because he's going player. After all. I mean, the players. They have to. I know, but they have to. He's still a member of that union, and they got to treat him like the rest of them. But it would be funny if they did come up with like a Tom Wilson's rule, where it's like, all right, if you're this much of an asshole, we're going to double that fine and make a they can afford a $10,000 fine too. You compare the fines in the NHL to the NFL. I mean, it's not even in the same stratosphere. It's pretty crazy, realistically. The
contracts aren't either, to be fair.
Well, that's true, but they're still, you know, Tom Wilson's still making millions of dollars every year. He's still like an elite hockey player. Like, that guy, as much as anyone in that league can afford to take some money out. It's also just completely unnecessary, like how aggressive he is. You saw that one, he threw I think it was Panarin onto the ice, and the guy's lucky his shoulder broke his fall, because his head was dangerously close to smacking against that ice, and that would have knocked him out, would have done some significant damage to him. And then you have like a Todd Bertuzzi type of situation or something like that. It's that stuff. I'm not anti-fighting in hockey. I think fighting's a great part of the sport. I enjoy watching it. I am anti that type of extracurricular stuff in hockey. And I think anyone with a brain is. But they need to call that stuff out more so. And I think it is getting called out. But you still have, like, you know, Ryan Whitney is coming to the defense of Tom Wilson. You have the Washington Capitals Twitter tweeting out that stupid meme.
Yeah, can we talk about that? In the most
inappropriate time. Ugh, yeah. Brutal.
I don't know. So I got called last night because I got called on it last night because I said, is this the worst sports tweet of all time? And then, of course, I forgot about the Raiders one after the George Floyd verdict, which was, I don't know if you saw that one. It was also brutal. But, I mean, and then to get back to Washington, too, they deleted it. You can't admit guilt like that. You can't tweet that and then delete it. Do you not know how the internet works? That only made it worse.
You got to stick by it. You do. It's just bad. It's bad. And guess what? There's also this misconception that it's an intern doing it. Nope, that's a social media director. That's somebody who has power in that organization that's like, yeah, no, this is appropriate, which makes it worse.
Probably
by the way,
a former social media director at this point.
Perhaps. I don't think they end up actually firing people after they tweet out stupid stuff like that. But it really does go back to, you know, the main issue, which is like, you should call players out like that, especially if they're on your team, if they're being that dirty. And Tom Wilson, he's just made a habit of it. People who aren't hockey fans know who this guy is because he's such an a-hole. It's just a fact of life that Tom Wilson is a dirty player. So, you know, he's going to keep doing that stuff if you don't hold him accountable. And I guess the only retribution you can really take is stick a goon on him. Again, that there needs to be some more monetary punishment so that he actually feels it and will think twice about, doing this stuff again.
So we'll see what he does. But, you know, when he comes back, and I don't know, to go back to the fine, I don't know if people are mad that he wasn't fined enough or it's just that he wasn't suspended.
Yeah.
Because I think that's part of it. I mean, that's more so the suspension's more so than the fine, right? There's the famous Rodney Harrison quote where he'd put aside however much money, 50 grand aside for fines that he knew he was going to use throughout the season. His whole thing was as long as he wasn't suspended, because if he was suspended, he wasn't out there helping his team, and that ate him more than having to pay a fine. Now, I don't know that every athlete has the same mentality that Rodney Harrison does, because he's Rodney Harrison, he's special, but I the suspension is more so, I think, what people are looking for.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you suspend him now, like, all right, the Capitals are already a playoff team. Let's sit him out the rest of the season. Now you got fresh legs for the postseason. It's a double-edged sword. So
suspend him in the postseason.
Give him a postseason that starts in, or a suspension that starts in the postseason, or you know, make it a conditional suspension where he has to serve it next season, not this season. Maybe the start of the year. Either way, it's definitely woefully short of appropriate. And I'm sure that this is going to be something that's discussed amongst the players, and something will change, because that was dangerously close to a serious head injury, which is something that I know the NFL and football gets a lot of flack for this, and they kind of take the brunt of this a problem when it comes to bad PR. But the NHL has a really bad problem with head injuries as well. And, you know, it's plays like that contribute to that problem. So if they really want to make a difference in that regard, you know, maybe hold these players accountable.
Sure. Absolutely. So, again, not the last time Tom Wilson will be discussed in this context, but we had to get it in a little bit. That's going to do it for us on this episode. We'll be back next week. We do have to talk some Red Sox. We can get into them. The Bruins and Celtics are plodding along. We've kind of hit that point, right, where it's just, you know, let's go. Let's get to playoffs already. We're done with the regular season. Let's go. I know there's some intrigue with the Celtics with the play-in, but we'll get to that next week. Until then, follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online at clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. Until the next one, for Alex Lovewitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.